This NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear about last night's debate with the Democratic candidates for Florida governor. We're going to hear a portion of that debate. Then we'll open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. We're also going to discuss the latest in the Trump-Russia scandal dispute. Call it what you want, but we'll be talking about that later on in the program. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa, and yesterday, once again, the Democratic candidates for Florida governor met in a debate. They held a debate. This is their third debate. They held a debate in South Florida, and or perhaps it's their fourth debate. They held a debate yesterday in South Florida. For the first time, Jeff Green, the billionaire who just announced 2 weeks ago that he was running, Jeff Green joined the panel of four other Democrats. So we're going to hear the five Democrats running for governor: Andrew Gillum, Gwen Graham, Jeff Green, Chris King, Philip Levine, in the debate that they held yesterday in Fort Myers. And as we listen to this debate, I want you to tell me who's doing the best, who's doing the worst, do you think, in terms of who you would vote for if you were voting in the August 28th primary. Only registered Democrats can vote in that primary, according to Florida's election rules. And the deadline to register to vote or to change your party registration is coming up. Just have a few more days to do that. So let's listen to a portion of last night's debate. As you listen to it, you can email us here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. Later on, you can call in at 813-239-9663. Bill Grace is our phone producer today, and let's listen to a portion of last night's debate with the Democratic candidates for governor on 88.5 FM.
Our next question will go to all of the candidates, beginning with Mr. Gillum. Have you or any PACs associated with your campaign accepted donations from Big Sugar, and would you accept any in the future?
Well, I will tell you, I have absolutely not accepted any money from Big Sugar. And that's what I can speak on today, because that's what I get to control. And I will tell you, when you elect me governor of the state of Florida, what we're going to do is make sure that we put the interests of everyday people first. I will tell you, I am not accepting money from Big Sugar, but I have also said that we've got to deal with the 50,000 citizens who are surrounding that industry, many of them communities of color, who are not being talked to about the kind of job industry that we're going to usher into their area once we transform the agricultural use around it. We can't have this conversation in the elite towers of liberalism. We have to have these conversations with everyday people whose lives are dependent on making sure that they can get a job and earn a wage and get access to health care and get retirement. We've got to make sure that we give those people a new deal around how it is that they're going to live their lives out once we transform sugar and make them a better corporate citizen in this state.
Mr. Green.
I will take no money from any sugar PAC or any special interest group. I'm going to have one special interest group when I'm the governor of Florida, and it's going to be you, the people of Florida. And I can tell you that the problem we have in Florida is we have a culture of corruption and bribery in Tallahassee. I mean, basically, almost every one of our elected officials is bought and paid for, and the day they get there, they have obligations to all of these special interest groups and PACs. And one thing about me is I'm not going to have any of that. So I promise you, I will not take a penny from not only Big Sugar, but any PAC. So when it comes to guns, when it comes to gun violence, I'm only going to be worried about you, the people of Florida. Thank you.
Mr. Levine.
Well, I can tell you that I'm definitely not taking sugar money, and we're not taking NRA money, but after I got my latest F from them, I don't think they're going to give me any, okay? We're not taking money from any of the power companies. But I think the bottom line is, and I want to just kind of reflect, we do have a culture of corruption. It's legal corruption. I mean, think what's going on in Tallahassee right now. You have these folks all of a sudden that are born again folks that love charter schools. They just can't get enough of them all of a sudden, because we know why. The charter school's giving money to this one's brother who's a lawyer, and this one's a consultant, and this one. And by the way, all of a sudden they love charter schools when our public schools are being starved. So if you watch the money, you'll understand what's going on, because let's say, people, He who pays the piper picks the tunes. And I can tell you, if I'm honored to be governor, it's not going to happen to the administration. Same way when I was the two-term mayor of Miami Beach. We're just going to get things done for the people of Florida. That's why I am running for governor of our great state. Thank you.
Ms. Graham.
Thank you. No and no. And I know that the Big Sugar is watching this very carefully because they know that change is coming. Because the next governor of Florida, they know with me, they get someone who's going to stand up to them and who's going to fight to make sure that we do what we need to do. So yes, we are going to have to obtain the land south of Lake Okeechobee. Right now, we don't have enough. We have to be able to have more of that Everglades agricultural area to make sure that we have a wide enough piece of land that's shallow enough to actually provide filtration for the water that's coming through. That's what we have to do biologically. That's what has to happen. So those that are currently farming sugar crops south of Lake Okeechobee, I'm going to work to make sure that we can swap out land in other places that does not affect our environment here in Florida, and make sure that we provide skill sets training for the new jobs that when I'm governor, we're going to be bringing to the state of Florida.
Mr. King.
You know, I've made this a cornerstone of my campaign because we could run this record every year of what conventional politicians say about how we fix the environment, and nothing ever changes. And one industry gets in the way of environmental progress. And you know, Congresswoman Graham, I have to disagree with one thing you just said, because it wasn't true. You have taken money from the sugar industry. You took thousands and thousands of dollars from the sugar industry, and that's just a policy difference I have with you. And then on the eve of our very first debate, you gave that money back. Because what we have to do as Democrats is we have to recognize that for us to change the future of Florida's environment and end these toxic discharges once and for all, we have to have the courage to stand up the forces that are coming up with the best arguments not to do these things, not to make these changes, not to build the reservoir, not to regulate the lands north of the lake. And until we do that, nothing is going to change.
Ms. Graham, for the second rebuttal.
I gave the $17,000 that I had received previously to the Indian River Lagoon Riverkeeper. So I am really proud that the sugar money is now being used to clean up the mess that they created.
Our next question tonight goes to Mr. Gillum. We'll ask all of you this question as well. There's supposed to be school safety officers in place in August in every school, but it's an unfunded mandate. A lot of places don't have the money. If you're governor, where does that money come from?
Yeah, I have to tell you, I think the legislature and the governor was half-hearted in their solution to addressing gun violence and the way gun violence shows up in our communities. Instead of arming teachers with more salaries, instead of arming them with more supplies in the classroom, instead of arming them with more training and support, they talked about arming them with weapons. Now, already we ask these teachers who are already doing the most difficult job that exists on earth, the making, the shaping, the molding, the inspiring of the minds of our most precious gifts, our children. And now we want them to be not just the teacher, but the social worker, the dean of students, the security guard. We have an obligation here to keep our kids safe. No parent wants to send their kid away from school worried about whether or not they'll have to pick them up in a body bag. That's not who we are. And that's why I took on the NRA and got sued by them for over 2 years. When I'm elected governor, we're going to take it to them. And we're going to adopt the kind of common sense laws that put people before guns.
Mr. Green.
When kids go to school in Florida, they have to feel safe, but they also have to feel safe in their neighborhoods. Everyone asks, how are we going to pay for this? You know, the problem with Florida today is, you know, I learned a little bit about education. Prior to third grade, kids learned to read. After third grade, kids read to learn. Well, you know that right now, only 56% of Florida third graders with a third grade reading level. So we need to spend money on a lot more than school safety. We need to do what New Jersey did when they took their schools from 36 in the country to 2 in the country. We are 40 in the country right now, according to U.S. News and World Report. So how are we going to pay for it? So let me tell you something they did. 2 years of mandatory pre-K. For every 3- and 4-year-old gets real pre-K. Not the voluntary pre-K that's a few hours a day of babysitting, but real pre-K. How are we going to pay for this? I'll tell you very quickly. Right now, there's a statistic. we spend, how much we spend as a percentage of our economy on education. We are 38th in the country. You know what? Because it has not been a priority for 20 years of Republican governors. When I'm governor, that will be a priority. We'll have plenty of money for safety and for educating our kids.
Mr. Levine.
Great. Well, first of all, let me actually answer the question, because I can assure every one of us on this stage, if any of us become the Democratic nominee for governor, this is going to be the big question that the Republicans are going to ask us, okay? So number one, we're going to have a combined earnings reporting system where no longer can companies in Florida take their earnings and actually divert it to zero income states like Delaware. That'll bring us hundreds of millions of dollars. Number two, we're gonna stop giving away corporate incentives because you can't bribe your way into becoming a 21st century economy. Number three, we're gonna stop with corporate tax loopholes because we are a low tax state and we should stay a low tax state. We're gonna make sure that we take that money from charter schools and put it into our public schools. We're gonna make sure that we have proper impact fees. We're gonna make sure we stop shaking down the Seminoles and shake hands with them and take that hundreds of millions of dollars and bring it to our schools. We're gonna make sure we have sports betting so we don't lose that money, keep it in the state of Florida. And we're gonna expand Medicaid. If we expand Medicaid, right away, we will save $500 million. And I could go on and on and on. Thank you.
Ms. Graham.
Was the question about guns?
It was.
Can
the
you
question
please,
was about school safety officers, supposed to be here in August, an
right.
unfunded mandate.
Yeah.
So if you're governor, where does that money come from?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, as someone who has worked in the public schools, I have seen this legislature provide unfunded mandates over and over and over again. And the hypocrisy after what happened on February 14th at Stoneman Douglas High School for them to do this yet again, what the gun lobby wanted was to arm our instructional personnel. I was at the school district when I was working in Leon County School District when Sandy Hook happened. And that was when I first started getting calls from teachers saying, please, Gwen, please, I do not want to have a gun. I am here to teach. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna make sure that we provide security in the way that it should be, which is with school resource officers. But I'm going to do more than that. I am tired of words. I am ready for action. I have already developed an executive order that allows the governor, whoever she is, to sign an executive order banning the sale of military-style assault weapons. It's one of the first things I'm going to do. And you know what? I've heard I'm going to be sued by the NRA. They already spent $300,000 against me in 2014 to try to beat me when I ran for Congress. I beat them, I will beat them again, and if they sue me, I say, bring it on.
Mr. King.
One of my new friends in this campaign is Latasha Hobbs. Latasha is from Jacksonville. She lost her son, Maurice, just about 2 years ago, just after he had turned 18 years old. A young African-American man, another victim of this epic of gun violence throughout the country and throughout our state. You know, since the beginning of my campaign, I have said I want to invest and support the big ideas that are going to change this once and for all and fund and support it. And so we came out with what has been called the most ambitious gun policy in Florida, what some people call a bullet tax, but what I call the Every Kid Fund for Gun Violence Prevention, which would take tax sales revenues from guns and from ammunition and add a new safety fee and create an ongoing revenue source to invest in the best school safety programs, the best infrastructure, the best technology, the best ideas on the planet to protect the future of our children.
Our next question is for Mr. Green.
You're listening to part of the debate last night between the Democratic candidates for governor right here on WMNF in Tampa. We're about to hear a question going to billionaire Jeff Green. Also in this debate last night, Andrew Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee, former North Florida Congresswoman Gwen Graham, businessman from the Orlando area Chris King, and Philip Levine, the former mayor of Miami Beach. Here's a question to Jeff Green on 88.5 FM.
You are in Lee County, one of the fastest growing public school districts in the state, growing an average of about 2,000 students every year. It doesn't have the funding to keep up with that demand and wants to increase taxes. On top of that, it has to share its capital dollars with charter schools. What will you do to better fund public schools?
Well, first of all, when I am governor, not a penny of public school money will be spent on private schools or charter schools, which are all just schools without rules. We have a tremendous education problem in this state. We are not taking care of our children. When I look at the statistics, you know, right now, if you look at a child in the fourth grade here in Florida, you know that fourth graders in public schools in Florida, only 48% are at the math fourth grade math. By the eighth grade, it's only 29%. You know where it is by the 12th grade? Only 19% of Florida seniors in high school are doing 12th grade math. And in reading, it's almost just as bad. 35% of our seniors are reading at the 12th grade level. So you know what? This is not a problem. This is an emergency. We are ruining these children's lives. How are these kids going to compete with kids all over Florida, all over the country, all over the world in a global economy when they're graduating at these levels? So every single penny for public education will be used for public education. And I can tell you, we will get our schools back to top five in the country by the time I'm done being governor.
Next question is for Mr. Levine. Our emergency rooms here in this area are packed with sick patients, especially in the winter in season. We have overcrowding in our hospitals. We have it every year over and over again. As governor, what would you do to ensure that more beds are approved at the state level to provide adequate health care for people who live here?
Right. Well, the first thing we have to do, and we're going to make sure, do the opposite of what Governor Scott did. Governor Scott turned his back on Floridians. He turned his back on hospitals by not accepting Medicaid expansion money. If I'm honored to be governor, we're not only going to accept it, we're going to demand as much as possible to ensure as many Floridians as we possibly can. That's number one. All right. Number two, the one thing I've learned is no matter where we go, no matter who we talk to, no one has a great model of what really works. Yes, we can expand Medicaid, and that's what we all plan to do to ensure more people. But we need to assemble the best and the brightest in the state of Florida. I mean the doctors, I mean patients, nurses, hospital administrators. We need to make sure we bring the health insurance companies in this, and we need to have a blue ribbon panel, all of us together, to come up with some innovative ideas of how to make Florida the model in delivering health care. Because the one thing I'm sure of, there is nowhere in the country right now that really has it right. Why can't Florida be a leader? And if I'm governor, we're going to do everything we can to become one. Thank you.
Our next question is for Ms. Graham. Southwest Florida is growing fast. Our traffic is getting worse year-round, and the rents are sky high. If you were elected governor, what would you do to manage that growth?
Well, all of these issues that you just referred to are quality of life issues, and they're issues that sadly, after 20 years of Republican rule, we are where we are, where people are not put first and foremost in all the decisions that are being made in Tallahassee. When I'm governor, I will wake up every day thinking about how do I make the lives of the people who live in this state better. So we need to have affordable housing. This is something that we see all across the state of Florida. The fact that this legislature over and over again has swept the Sadowski Trust and not provided the resources to help communities build affordable housing for people all across the state of Florida is yet another appalling example of the failure in Tallahassee. In terms of growth, and we see it everywhere, yes, I have sat in traffic today. Who hasn't? We have not invested in our infrastructure. One of the things as a former member of Congress that I will be able to do, and I will do, is I will wear my Team Florida t-shirt to Washington, D.C. and demand that we have the resources that we are entitled to as the third largest state in the country to address our infrastructure needs.
Mr. King, we're still recovering from Hurricane Irma here. It's been very lengthy and very costly, especially for people in certain areas. What would you do to help people who are struggling after a major hurricane, especially those folks who seem to struggle with their insurance companies and still are after Irma to get their claims settled?
Absolutely. So this is a problem all across Florida, not unique to Southwest Florida. And it's the concept of having a governor and a government that is a champion for consumer protection. That is looking out for folks who are not getting a fair deal from their insurance companies. You know, insurance companies, by and large, the bargain we make with them is that when things go bad, when that storm hits, they're there to protect us and to care for us so that our family can go on. And you better believe I will be a governor who will be looking out for the consumers of Florida, not just when it comes to housing issues, which are critically important in Southwest Florida because we have an affordable housing crisis here and the hurricane only exacerbated that, but when it comes to insurance, access to affordable insurance and care for and protection of families that have been burned by fraud or bad products in the midst of their crisis.
The next question is for Mr. Gillum. The Florida Department of Citrus recently reported citrus production in Florida could drop by as much as 82% by 2026, largely due to citrus greening. Now tariffs could also come into play. How would you save Florida's citrus industry and make it grow again?
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing we ought to do is demand that our agricultural commissioner, who seems to be so close to President Donald Trump, would actually demand of his friend that he get rid of these ridiculous tariffs, which are causing major trouble between our allies all across the globe. I've said Donald Trump is uniquely unqualified for the office that he holds. But since he's there, certainly the Republicans ought to leverage their power to get him to do right by the state of Florida. Now, the truth is that agriculture is an important part of this state, as is tourism. But we've got to start to look around and establish a North Star for the future economy of this state. Yes, we ought to go to Washington and advocate for the resources that we need to ensure that we can prop up this ag industry. But we also have to make sure that we're doing innovative things like I've done in Tallahassee. We received the tech hire designation during the Obama administration for the work that we're doing to train and retrain people on technology-related jobs, both high and low tech, so that they can walk into this future economy, get a good job, a good wage, a good set of health care, and a good retirement. We got to think about the future of Florida's economy as a part of this answer.
Mr. Green. Voters legalized medical marijuana here nearly 2 years ago, but the access has still been extremely limited, especially in this area. So how would you clear the way for the industry, and do you favor legalized recreational marijuana?
You know, the people of Florida voted to have medical marijuana. I mean, think about the people that need medical marijuana to treat their pain. These are people that have the worst types of cancer, the most dreaded diseases, AIDS victims. And, you know, we are depriving them of getting this treatment because Rick Scott decides they can't smoke it. That is ridiculous. The day that I'm governor, medical marijuana will be available to every single person who needs it. As far as legalized marijuana, I have a little nuanced view. You know, I'm the father of three young boys. They're 4, 6, and 8 years old. And I kind of imagine, you know, what would it be like 5 years from now if my oldest son, who would be 13 years old, going over to his friend's house and there's a marijuana cigarette, pack of cigarettes on the table, is he going to be more likely to smoke marijuana? So here's the good news. Other states have already legalized marijuana. So what I'd like to do as governor is let's see what's happened in states like Colorado. If consumption has increased among young people in places like this, I'd say let's definitely decriminalize it, but don't legalize it. If it hasn't, I'd say legalize it, regulate it, tax it, and that'll be the end of the story for good.
Our next question is for Mr. Levine. You're in a largely conservative district here tonight. What makes you think that you can carry this area and win?
I'll tell you why. I think because I'm somebody that has lived the American dream. I started from nothing. I took a job on a cruise ship. With $500, I built a business, and I became wildly more successful than I ever thought possible. I sold that business, and then I became a two-term mayor who didn't talk a lot. I got a lot done. And I think that what people are looking for, not only in our state and our country, is they're looking for people that don't talk about what they're going to do, actually get things done. And as somebody that brings both success in the private sector and success in the public sector, I think I'm uniquely have ability to cross over to Republicans, to Democrats, and to independents. I think the one thing we do know today is we don't want to elect someone just necessarily from the private sector who's never been tested in the public sector, okay? And I think we could all agree with that. Thank you so much.
Ms. Graham, we have a lot of businesses in our area that rely on immigration for employees. What would you do as governor to give those folks a legal path to citizenship for those workers who are the lifeblood of two of our top industries here, tourism and agriculture?
Well, as you know, immigration is a federal issue, and it's something that I'm very disappointed in Congress, that Congress has not developed a comprehensive immigration reform plan, because we desperately need it. But I can tell you what we're not going to do here in Florida. We're not going to be a state like Rick Scott has wanted to establish and Donald Trump wants to establish for our country that's not welcoming and recognizing the great addition that all those who have moved here from other places in the world provide to the state of Florida. I am the granddaughter of a Syrian Lebanese immigrant, and I would not be here today but for the welcoming nature of our country. So when I'm governor, we're going to welcome all to the state of Florida, support them, and work towards a process where they do not have to live in fear, because those who are here are living in the shadows, and I want people to be able to come out from the shadows and be able to live their life fully here in Florida.
Mr. King, given the current flux of the Affordable Care Act and Florida's decision not to accept the Medicaid expansion, what would the state's role in health care be with you as governor?
So tomorrow, good timing to ask this question, I will begin a 12-day tour going all across the state of Florida, rolling out our next big idea of this campaign, what I call universal participation, or keeping the promise with Florida's seniors and children and the folks in working families that don't have access to health care. The problem is pretty simple. We have 2.5 million people across the state of Florida that don't have access to a doctor who knows their name. Rick Scott said no to Medicaid expansion, even when the faith community and the business community and many Republicans in the Senate had lined up to pass it. And so it first starts with this pledge that as governor, I will do everything in my power to pass Medicaid expansion legislatively. And if I can't do that, I will take it to the ballot in 2020 and work to pass it just like the state of Maine did. And then we will work to strengthen the exchanges. So those folks in Southwest Florida who are having access and affordability problems with health care will have more choices.
That was Chris King answering a question about a Medicaid expansion and health care in Florida. You're listening to part of the debate from last night in which the five Democrats running for the gubernatorial nomination of their party debated in Fort Myers. We're hearing from Chris King, Philip Levine, Jeff Green, Gwen Graham, and Andrew Gillum. And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. If you have an opinion about who is winning this debate or who is losing this debate, you can email us at the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. We're going to hear a few more minutes of this debate, and then we'll talk a little bit about President Trump and Russia, some of the latest on that. We'll open up the phone lines too, so stick around. This is 88.5 FM. Let's go back to more of last night's Democratic debate.
Mr. Gillum, voters will get a say in whether or not the homestead exemption increases. Is that a good idea to increase it to $75,000? And if not, why shouldn't folks get to keep more of their tax money?
Yeah, I have to answer this question in my hat as a mayor and now 15 years as an elected official at the local level. First of all, I encourage everyone to look under the nuance of this constitutional amendment. This is a bad deal. One, everyone does not get to benefit from the increase, expanded homestead exemption. Two, you have a homestead exemption that might result in a couple of dollars of saving, but think of what it will do to our school districts across the state of Florida. Already underfunded school districts that right now will see more and more seepage away from being able to ensure an opportunity to learn for all of our kids. Think of safety and security. In my city, where I am mayor, our ad valorem taxes don't even cover enough to take care of our police department alone. That's before you get to parks and recreation and all of those other things. So I would encourage you, we live in a society, a collective, a belief that all of us do good when we do good. And why would we take money out of the system to starve the public process of the needed resources it needs for all of us to live a strong and healthy quality of life? It's a bad idea.
Mr. Green, if elected, you would take office under a Republican president. What would you do to work with President Trump to better the state of Florida?
Well, you asked the right guy. I mean, I've been fighting with Donald Trump since as long as I've known him. I mean, anybody here can look online and see what I did the day before the election when I went on NBC. And I gave a big push for Hillary Clinton and said all these wonderful things about her. And they asked about Donald Trump. I said, I know Donald Trump, and I can tell you, I'd be scared to death to have him as my president. I had no idea how right I would be. It has been a nightmare, and we are going to have to stand up to Donald Trump, because you know what? I mean, as a Florida governor, am I going to stand by when Donald Trump rips children from mom's arms when they're struggling to get into America? Am I going to allow Donald Trump to undermine our whole national identity with what he did with Putin this week? I mean, he's nothing but a traitor. So I can promise you, I've stood up with him before. I will stand up with him as governor stronger than anyone you can imagine.
Mr. Levine, same question for you. How would you work with President Trump to better the state of Florida?
Well, for about a year and a half of my life, I was out there working for Secretary Clinton to elect the first president, female president of the United States of America. I was able to donate to her, raise funds for her, and became her probably number one top surrogate on television. Matter of fact, I think I'm the only Democrat that would go on Fox. I'd wear my Kevlar vest and I would take the bullets, and I did it. You know, I warned everybody that this guy is the best deal he ever did in business was being born, okay? And we understand what we got today and we're living a national nightmare. But I think what's more important than that are two things. This race for governor is not only the most important race in our country, it's the most important race in the world. Because so goes this governor's race, so goes the presidency in 2020, folks, okay? That's how important this race is going to be. And let me tell you another race that's even that much more important is the Senate race. And we need to reelect Bill Nelson to the United States Senate, okay?
Ms. Graham.
Thank you.
Same question for you.
First, I'd like to say that I want to discuss briefly my health care plan, because I put out a full health care proposal a couple weeks ago where we're going to take Medicaid expansion, we're going to provide a public option so that anyone in the state of Florida can buy into the same type of insurance that any Florida legislator gets. It's going to drive down costs, provide better access. We're going to do a reinsurance market so that we can drive down the cost of those policies for the most high-risk patients. And I'm going to start taking care of our seniors again. We have abandoned the most vulnerable here in the state of Florida. And I'm going to make sure that our seniors are cared for. And that's a wonderful segue into Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump does not understand anybody who wants to work with him. He understands strength. And my strength is going to be that I'm going to be fighting for the people of Florida every single day. And I'm not going to put up with anything that Donald Trump does that in any way limits every single Floridian's opportunity to have the best life here in the state of Florida and a quality of life here in the state of Florida that we all deserve.
Mr. King, same question to you.
Well, I think first we have to win the contest of ideas. You know, part about defeating Donald Trump or standing up to Donald Trump is being able to cast a vision for the people of Florida, many of which voted and loved Donald Trump, on why we can serve them better, on why we can serve them with excellence. Secondly, I think when he does what he does, when he says the awful things he says, we have to stand with boldness and courage. You know, when he said what he did about those who immigrate from Haiti or from African countries, that very day I was in Little Haiti, surrounded by Haitian business leaders. And that night from South Florida, I said that what he said today from the Oval Office was not just wrong and cruel, it was un-American. And as the governor of Florida, I would speak up every chance I get. What we don't like in Donald Trump and what we can't tolerate in our party or theirs is the bully mentality. Somebody who seeks to, through force of character and the nature and the way they talk, talk down to us. We can't allow that in our party, and we certainly can't allow him to get away with it.
Mr. Gillum, same question to you.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I'm not sure what I can do much to work with Donald Trump other than try to wrestle away that BlackBerry or whatever device he is tweeting so actively on. Honestly, the man is a danger to himself and, more importantly, to the nation and the world. But I will tell you, if the president wanted to send us infrastructure money, just as Obama tried to send us money to build high-speed rail across the I-4 corridor, we take it, we put people to work, and we build a 21st century transportation system that benefits the people of Florida. If Donald Trump came to his senses and decided that he wanted to make sure that we will get access to Medicaid expansion in this state, we take that money because our refusal has cost us $6 billion in last year's budget alone. And now we got people in this state who are terrified of getting sick, because if they get sick, they can't go to work. And if they can't go to work, they can't earn a wage. And if they can't earn a wage, they cannot pay their bills. And when they cannot pay their bills, something gets turned off, right? That's the lived experience of people in this state. So while Donald Trump is a distraction, the governor of the state of Florida has to go to work for the people of the state of Florida.
Andrew Gillum there last night during the Democratic debate. Gillum, mayor of Tallahassee. Before that, we heard from Chris King, a businessman from the Winter Park, Orlando area. And then before that, we heard Gwen Graham, former Congresswoman from North Florida, In there, we heard Phil Levine, the former mayor of Miami Beach, and Jeff Green, the billionaire who just entered the race a few weeks ago. So what did you think? Who won that debate? Who lost it? 813-239-9663. Did you have a favorite candidate in that debate? Again, 813-239-9663. David writes this: I feel that Jeff Green is not ready for prime time. I think he'll go down in flames like he did in the Senate primary against Kendrick Meek a few weeks ago. Green reminds me too much of Trump, too hot-headed, and that's not a good temperament for a public servant, writes David. David, thank you for that. I think Green was the only one last night who said during the debate that Trump was a traitor. Those are my words, and just quoting from the debate last night. Keith writes this: as a parent, I oppose mandatory pre-K. We kept our child with us until kindergarten, and she now has a magna cum laude college degree. I do, however, feel that voluntary pre-K should be available and well-funded, writes Keith. And Bob in Tarpon Springs writes this: Green and Levine came off as the most practiced statesmen. Slick, rehearsed, and polished. Going into the debate, I was on the fence between Graham and Gillum. Graham didn't have the best showing in the debate. My support is going to Gillum, writes Bob. And 813-239-9663 is our phone number, email address, dj@wmnf.org. Well, President Trump accused the news media yesterday and today of trying to provoke a confrontation with Russia that could lead to war as he continues to push back against criticism of his summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The president tweeted this morning, "The fake news media wants so badly to see a major confrontation with Russia, even a confrontation that could lead to war." He tweeted, "They are pushing so recklessly hard and hate the fact that I'll probably have a good relationship with Putin. We're doing much better than any other country," he tweeted. Trump also complained that many news reports about him are total fiction. He tweeted this morning, "The media is going crazy." Marked the start of day three of Trump trying to manage the political fallout from his widely criticized performance at the summit meeting with Putin this weekend in Finland. Trump had toughened his tone about Russia on Wednesday, saying in a CBS News interview that he told the Russian president to his face during Monday's summit to stay out of America's elections, and that's the way it's going to be. The rhetoric marked a turnabout from Trump's first upbeat description of the sit-down meeting with Putin. Still, Trump backtracked on whether Russia is currently targeting U.S. elections. Asked the question yesterday, he answered no, and that put him sharply at odds with recent public warnings from his own intelligence chief. Hours later, the White House stepped in to say Trump's answer wasn't what it appeared. The scale of bipartisan outcry at Trump's stance toward Putin has only been rivaled by his 2017 waffling over condemning white supremacist demonstrators in Charlottesville, Virginia. On Monday, Trump appeared to question the findings of U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia interfered in the 2016 election. His reservations expressed 18 months into his presidency, and as he stood next to Putin on foreign soil, prompted blistering criticism here at home, even from some prominent fellow Republicans. The muddied waters have deepened critics' concerns that Trump is not taking threats to the U.S. electoral system seriously enough, pressed on why Trump has repeatedly passed on opportunities to publicly condemn Putin's actions. The White House said yesterday that Trump was working to make the most of an opportunity for the two leaders to work together on shared interests. One such opportunity is what Trump termed an incredible offer from Putin to allow the U.S. access to Russians accused of election hacking and other interference. In exchange, though, Putin wants Russian interviews of Americans accused by the Kremlin of unspecified crimes. Sanders, the White House spokesperson, said Trump is still weighing that offer with his team, adding that we've committed to nothing. Russian officials have said that they want to interview Kremlin critics Bill Browder and former U.S. ambassador to Russia Michael McFaul. McFaul tweeted yesterday that he hoped the White House would denounce this ridiculous request from Putin. Lawmakers have urged Trump to reject the deal. Let's listen in on what former ambassador to Moscow McFaul said on MSNBC this morning about the suggestion by Putin that McFaul be sent to Russia to be interviewed about unspecified crimes.
press that they had a list, and I was at the top of that list. Shocking. This is classic whataboutism by the Russians, right? You have this indictment, well, we have this indictment of these people, tit for tat. And then most shocking and just lamentable, I think, is my real reaction when the White House was given the opportunity to categorically reject this moral equivalency between a legitimate indictment with lots of data and evidence to support it from Mr. Mueller with a crazy cockamamie scheme with no relationship to facts and reality whatsoever. The White House refused to do that. And I hope they get, I hope somebody asks them another question today and they'll get it right today. We've seen a lot of that lately, that they want to have a take two and take three to get the message right. But this is not just about me. This is about American national interest. We cannot allow this kind of moral equivalency when dealing with Vladimir Putin.
We played the White House reaction to that question yesterday. Let me show you a different story at the State Department yesterday. Here's that exchange.
I can't answer on behalf of the White House with regard to that, but what I can tell you is that the overall assertions that have come out of the Russian government are absolutely absurd. The fact that they want to question 11 American citizens and the assertions that the Russian government is making about those American citizens, we do not stand by those assertions that the Russian government makes.
And Ambassador, that seemed to be the consensus inside the halls of Congress. You had Republicans and Democrats alike saying this is not going to happen. Senator Mark Warner said we're not sending Ambassador McFaul to Russia. Do you think there's any chance this actually happens?
Well, first of all, I want to thank my State Department colleagues for that very strong statement. What was unusual about it, I mean, it was fantastic. That's like what a normal statement would be in a normal times. Yeah. The thing that was abnormal about it was the first phrase, while I can't speak for the White House. Mm. I'm sorry, this is one Trump administration. I worked at the White House for 3 years. That sentence, if it ever had come up, both sides would be outraged. Right. The White House would say, what do you mean? You don't speak for us and vice versa. So yet again, the Trump administration seems to have two policies towards Russia, not one. With respect to the future, I now have lawyers and I have to take precautions. I think it's highly unlikely that the U.S. government would ever entertain, it's called an MLOT request. There is a treaty where this can happen with respect to criminal investigations, but the state, the Department of Justice would have to approve of it. And then I also would be able to go to a judge if that happened. But I think that's a pretty low probability.
Hi, Ambassador. You are a former ambassador. You're a scholar. You understand Russian psyops. You understand their geopolitical strategy and goals. What do you think Vladimir Putin tried to do to Trump in that meeting? What do you think he might have tried to get out of him in that meeting? And secondly, what would they do to you if we did send you over there? What would Putin do to you?
Well, I it's a classic, I've known Vladimir Putin for a long time. Met him first in 1991. I've been in several meetings with him when I was in the government. And I wrote a whole book about his intimidation and harassment of me as the U.S. ambassador to try to document for the American people who this guy is and what he does, both abroad and to his own people and to diplomats like me. It's unprecedented what he does. With his meeting with Trump, it's classic whataboutism. You got your problems, we got our problems, you have your charges, we have our charges against your American government officials. And what I fear, because President Trump probably is not as conversant in these issues as he should be, or most certainly not as conversant as Putin is he probably just nodded along and said, oh yeah, okay, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Oh, you have some trouble with our government officials? Oh, well, and you don't need to believe me, he said it to the world, you played the clip. He thinks it was a really great idea. And that's just perfect for Vladimir Putin. With respect to me personally, Vladimir Putin doesn't like me. He doesn't like what I've written about him. He doesn't like what I say about him. Right now, not even when I was in the government, this is an act of intimidation against me, and it's gonna create problems for me in the long run. You know, there are my government, I hope, will step up today and categorically swat this back. And when I mean my government, I mean my president of the United States of America. When he just said last night, America's no longer under attack, I'm sorry. I'm an American, and I'm under attack by Vladimir Putin right now. So I hope he'll stand up. But now they're going to make my life more difficult as I travel abroad, perhaps, with Interpol, perhaps. You know, they want to harass me, and they want to intimidate me and make me quiet.
Mr. Ambassador?
Well, that's Michael McFaul, the former ambassador to Russia, this morning on MSNBC, talking about this idea that the White House is considering, and that is maybe sending him and some other people over to Russia to be interrogated and to have some Russians over who are facing indictment be questioned by U.S. officials. So we can talk about that, too. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Let me read some of these emails that have come in regarding the candidates for governor. Art from Largo writes this. The strongest was Gillum, writes Art. And Art says the weakest was Graham because of her political statements of waking up each morning thinking about how she can help Floridians and putting on a T-shirt with verbiage to impress Congress. To this octogenarian, it's balderdash. That's Art. And then here's an email about the Trump-Russia story. Kat writes, the jury is still out on the Helsinki news conference. It looks to me like the media here and in the UK are trying to demonize Russia Putin in the same way they did Saddam Hussein. We're not entirely innocent of interfering in other countries' governments. Why the fake concern over yet another crazy statement from Trump? We should be used to that by now. That's a Kat's email. What do you think? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Now we open up the phone lines and we're going to take your phone calls. DJ's in Tampa. DJ, thank you for calling in. What would you like to comment about?
Hey, good morning, Rob. It smells so good on check-in. I find it kind of funny I'm able to get in when we're talking about candidates, but when we're talking about madness, the lines are just blowing up and nobody, you know what I'm saying, everybody has an opinion on that. But anyways, I will say I felt kind of weird when, you know, when they asked, did you take PAC money? You know, that's the same kind of rhetoric that we got going on now. No, I didn't take it. But then, you know, you got another candidate that fact-checked her right then and there, you know what I'm saying, and put it on blast, and then she tried to come back and say, oh, well, I gave the money away. See, that right there already makes her a dishonest politician because you're already saying that, well, I'll take the money, but I'll give it to somebody else who I think will benefit from it. No, the question was, did you take back money? She did, and she was wrong. The other thing about Gillum, he's just so slept on. I mean, in the media, they're really playing up Levine just simply because he has the money to put into it. Rick Scott did the same thing, but look what we got with Rick Scott. He put his $70,000 in and then cut education and got his money right back. So this is a pattern, and we need more dialogue like this, even if it's just clips. You know what I'm saying? I thank you, WMNF, at 8.5, you know what I'm saying, for everything
right.
Y'all do.
All right, DJ, good to hear from you. Thanks for checking in.
That's real.
All right, 813-239-9663 is our phone number, getting your take on two questions. The latest controversy involving President Trump and Russia, and also last night's candidates debate where five Democratic candidates were debating each other. It was a largely friendly event, as you heard, not too many attacks on each other, although DJ is right. There was a fact check by Chris King against Gwen Graham over whether or not she did take money from the sugar industry. Initially, she said no to that question, but then King pointed out that she took money and then she admitted giving it back or forwarding it to an environmental group on the East Coast. Let's go to Joe in St. Pete. Joe, well, what's on your mind? What would you like to comment about?
Oh, there's so many things on my mind. I would like to take attention to the word send. Send our people over to Russia. Isn't there something that says they can refuse to go? I don't understand why.
There is a due process, so they can fight. They can fight being sent over. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that would be well. I would hope that our government wouldn't go so far as to try and send them over for unspecified crimes. When you say unspecified, it sounds like they're trying to truck something up. not to use a pun, but they're trying to come up with something. They don't know what it is yet, but they're trying to make our people say, you know, they're trying to equivocate. Well, your people are just as bad as our people. So I took exception to that.
I think what's strange is that probably the White House eventually will say, no, it's a bad idea. But you heard the State Department come out really clearly saying yesterday, no, it's a bad idea. But the White House was like taking its time and equivocating. I don't think any American, probably even the 99% of the White House, except President Trump, have made up their mind. It's a bad idea. But why are they so slow to come out to say it's a bad idea?
Well, that's the thing. And everything that Trump does, I just can't believe that. I'm sorry to say this over and over again. I just can't believe that he's our president.
All right. Joe, thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts. Well, if you think President Trump is a good president, we want to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jim in Bradenton. Jim, what do you think?
Yes, as far as the Democratic governor's debate, I think all the Democratic candidates are pretty much right on the main issues. I feel Gwen Graham would be the strongest candidate in November because she's best positioned to pull in votes from all over the state, you know. And I think she could win in November if she can win the primary.
Do you? All right. Do you think that, you know, some people think that she might be too moderate for most Democrats? What would you say to those people that say she's a little tepid?
Her views on health care, on every issue, she's right on the money. And, you know, the fact that her dad was Bob Graham, if she can get past the primary, I think she can win in November, and that's the important thing. We need someone who can win in November, and I think Gwen Graham could do that.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot. Thanks for your thoughts. All right, good to hear from you. By the way, James Lyles is our phone producer today, and you can call him up, and then he'll send you on to me. The number to call, 813-239-9663. And this is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Barbara writes this, thank you so much for rebroadcasting the debate. I missed it last night. And she goes on to say, why did the party choose to ask a different question to each candidate? It's hard to differentiate when we can't compare answers. I heard the same question about Trump, but no other repeats. There were a few questions tossed to all of them, including whether or not they would take money from the sugar industry. We heard all four of them answer that question, but questions, I think, came from the journalists who work at Wink TV in Fort Myers, and not sure what the understanding was between the Democratic Party and Wink, which I think both organizations sponsored that debate. So I really, Barbara, I don't know why the format was chosen. I got to admit that. Gina writes this. Actually, she sent me an article. Gina, thanks for the article. I can't read it on the air. Adam writes this, if Trump is not a Russian agent, he sure isn't acting like it. Russia has to have something on him. Otherwise, why can he attack everyone else except for Russia, writes Adam. And DeMarco writes this, what happens when Secret Service, the security for the executive branch of the U.S. government, has been obstructing justice for months by preventing Jared Kushner from being served in a case involving U.S. citizens colluding with Russia to interfere in the last presidential election. Yeah, that story broke today. The Secret Service is preventing process servers from serving Jared Kushner in a case involving collusion with Russia, alleged collusion with Russia. Okay. And Gina says this about the candidates. It was so clear that most all the candidates come from big bucks. How can any identify with working people in Florida? With the exception of Gillum, perhaps, the cost of elections has drawn only the rich and the mighty in this state, writes Gina. Gina, thank you for that. We're going to go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Elizabeth, we just have 30 seconds. What would you like to say?
I said it yesterday. Trump has such business connections in Russia. He's going to lean towards them. I don't know if he'll send them any people over there, but his business connections are what are leading him forward and his friendship.
Well, there's an easy way to disprove that if he's innocent of that, innocent of business connection with Russia, and that is he could release his tax returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. You see that happening, too. You said yesterday it's going to take the, I don't know what, to pry it loose, because it isn't going to come easily from him. He doesn't want to show it.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. Well, stay tuned, because coming up next, the Midpoint Program with Lynn Marvin Dingfelder. That's coming up in the next hour. She's got a musician guest. We're going to hear that program next, and then executive session coming up today at 1 o'clock. Thanks for listening. I'm Rob Lori. This is WMNF 88.5 FM. Our phone producer has been James Lyles. If you want to comment about today's show, call us up. 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. This is W.